open up. It's the Spectacle Podcast.
I am going to remain silent, and I want to speak to my lawyer.
Ooh, takes off hat, jumps on it several times. Ooh, they got me again. Hi, welcome to the podcast.
No kidding. I did once get cops chasing me into a party. They like saw me out on the street doing something they did not like, and I ran it back into the party that I had just come out of. The party was a fundraiser for anarchist lawyers. The party was full of anarchist lawyers. When the cops tried to talk to me, I said, I want to talk to my lawyer. Every person in the room raised their hand. And like 10 minutes later, one of the cops genuinely like looked down in despair, shook his head and went, "Ugh, lawyers."
I love it when they really play up their role as just cartoon villains.
Yeah.
Oh, shucks. Foiled again. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. Talking with me are my friends, Miriam and Vicky. Say hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody. Sorry, I'm Vicky. Hi. Hello.
That one's Vicky.
Hi. This one's Miriam.
That one's Miriam. Thank you all so much for joining me today for the podcast. I wanted to do this episode pretty much since I got tricked into starting a podcast. Today we are going to play a cheeky little game, a game that I'm basing off an article Miriam wrote many years ago that I think was called Fictional Cops and How Guilty I Feel as an Anarchist for Loving Them. Is that close to the mark?
It was something like that. It was an exploration of the few fictional cops that I actually enjoy as characters and like, and just how conflicted I feel about that.
It's a classic.
I thought that was a really genius idea for a nerdy little anarchy article. And I really wanted to gamify it. So the game is thus. Now, we're all cop haters here, right? ACAB.
Oh, yeah.
ACAB.
Not so fast. You've fallen for my trap.
No!
Because I want to talk to my lawyer again.
Because I know that we've all chosen one fictional cop that we think is a good cop. We're going to have a little battle royale to determine what is the one good cop who deserves to be spared the wall.
Yeah. I mean, not all cops, hashtag not all cops, I guess. Is that the theme?
Not all cops. Let's get it going.
Hashtag all real cops.
Right. That's true. Yeah. These are fictional cops.
One of the points I made in the article is that my favorite thing about all these cops is that they're fictional. Like that's the best thing they have going for them as cops.
Yeah. I will never have to encounter them when I've had a few too many and I just want to take an innocent leak on a police cruiser.
Exactly. Yeah.
I believe you mean public gender neutral bathroom.
Yeah. And somebody better tell them about it. Let's lay the groundwork. Let's do a little cultural symbolism.
Okay.
I think that cop shows or like detective stories, whatever, are like the drama of this modern age. You can pack so many different types of conflict into that bad boy. but whether it's all copaganda is a real question, because for the most part, these stories can't really dismiss the usefulness or at least like the potential of police as an idea.
Mm-hmm. If you have a show where a cop is the protagonist and you make as the premise, this person should not exist. I mean, I would watch, but I think you would probably not get a wide audience. And in terms of like the storytelling potential, you're probably only going to get a couple of seasons out of that before it gets very frustrating.
Yeah, the one thing that I always think about that you made me think about, which is a little different though, is that there's no other job that you can just like refer to the job as a whole genre of fictional production. Like, there's not like it's not like, oh yeah, it's a bus driver. It's a bus driver movie, or like, you know, I guess medical comes close, but like cop is like a whole genre of fiction production that and detective. That, yeah, that like, you know, other things are like romance, but like cop. This to me is that sort of the copaganda function is like the structural, like the constant beat of how many there are. But I do agree that like sometimes there are things within it that God, am I gonna get like super nerdy? There's like that Jacques Derrida thing where he talks about how like the detective is like the perfect image of like the literary critic of like attempting to understand like meaning. And like, that's what the detective is really doing is like reading a literary text. And like, okay, I read that like 20 years ago and I didn't understand it then. So please, if you're like, what is she talking about? I apologize. But yeah. So I think like the detective, you're totally right, is like a really core like metaphor in our society as well as being copaganda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, a mystery makes for like a really wonderful story. I love a mystery, but like I prefer my mysteries without cops in them. And, you know, that certainly exists as a genre. But like, because we live in a society where retributive justice and prison exists, it's kind of hard to separate the solving of a mystery from like fighting crime as a concept if you're setting the stories in like a world that resembles our world.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that like cop stories sort of grow out of, you know, if you think back before like cop was an actual job that we thought of whenever we want to decide that they came up with that. There were night stories. There's like, we did an episode on the Green Knight just a few episodes ago. But like stories rarely subvert the idea that the protagonist has to be a hero. I think like a lot of prestige TV now, like really, you know, plays along with that, but people will totally miss the point. Like thinking like Walter White from Breaking Bad is like a cool dude, or Tony Soprano's like totally sick. But like, you better believe there's vested interest in who gets portrayed as the good guys.
Well, what's interesting about that, though, is I feel like one of the big genres of detective fiction, especially in like American film, is your noir detective. Mm-hmm. And noir detectives are rarely simple heroes, right? They are usually somewhere on the anti-hero spectrum.
They're also, though, noir heroes are usually not cops. Like at best, they're private eyes.
Exactly. So
like, yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Your Sam Spades, you know, guys like that. They're not cops. They usually know cops, but they're not usually working directly with the cops. And they usually have a like fairly contentious relationship with both cops and like the concept of law.
That's really good. I want to put a pin in that one, because that's a little hobby horse of mine. As like, I think that the detective story could be wrestled back from people who believe in the police, because a detective is just a cool little guy who likes puzzles.
He's just a cool little guy who likes puzzles, and then some dame walks into his office and it's all downhill from there. But
yeah,
he knew he was lost. He knew he was lost the second he saw the color of her lipstick, you know, and it, you know, his heart started beating faster, and the smoke curling off of her, you know, cigarette just doomed him to a life of infamy, you know.
I knew she killed her husband, but I thought that was pretty cool. So like, I guess my question is, what is a good cop? No, what is a cop? What, like, is a meter maid a cop? Is like the snitching busybody on your block a cop? I leave these questions to the philosophers. They're all cops to me. Cops all the way down. Some have even suggested that there's a cop in your very head.
I have heard that.
Chilling. Mm. Chilling if true.
Terrifying. Terrifying news.
Yeah. What do we would want to define a cop as today?
So, well, for the purpose of this exercise, so like I actually went through, like when we were doing this, we had to choose and defend one cop. I actually like went through some cop adjacent people and decided that for this exercise, it would be, we'd be using the sort of standard definition, which is like an armed bureaucrat who is paid by the state to enforce the law. Right. That was how I decided like which cop I was going to talk about for this show, which is very different from what, but that's like, that's, you know, that's a very narrow definition of the cop. I think
that's
probably
that's what I have. What I wrote down is yours is pretty much the same and a little less long in the tooth. Someone with the ability to lock away and even murder supposed criminals with relative impunity employed by a governing power. Though that can sort of define like a basic soldier as well.
Yeah, and I think that doesn't necessarily encompass your self-appointed cops, right? Mm-hmm. Which are also cops to me. Like, yeah. On the one hand, I think more conventionally, I would say like a cop in sort of the narrowest definition. If the state has a monopoly on violence, the cops are the ones who do the violence, right? Mm-hmm. The cops are the people who use violence to enforce the power of the authority, right? Mm-hmm. But because there's also because you don't necessarily need a state to have cops, that gets more complicated in that setting. I also went pretty traditional in like my definition of what is a cop when I was picking my cop. My cop would and does call himself a cop, but it does get interesting if you think like. In terms of, you know, is the noir detective a cop if what he does in the end is unmask a murderer? Is the person who calls the cops a cop? I kind of think so. Yeah. But where does that, I mean, I think from like in a story setting, I feel like a cop is different from a detective. Mm-hmm. But I can't, and I think that's because like the cop is concerned with enforcing the law. The detective is concerned with solving the mystery. And like those are overlapping Venn diagrams. And like CSI lives in that overlap.
Yeah, but ultimately they're not mutually exclusive at all. I completely agree. Yeah. Lots of people want to solve. Journalists also solve mysteries in ways that aren't unlike the way cops behave. And journalists sometimes are cops. Miriam, I think actually your definition was helpful because when you said someone who does violence to maintain that force of order, you actually, like Io and I both explicitly said being sort of paid by the state, but like lots of people can enforce that violence without being paid by the state. Like your definition, I think, is the one that is broad enough to like allow lots of other people to be, if not cops themselves, acting cop-like or in cop ways.
Yeah, as long as the state doesn't, you know, punish them for, as long as it's very clear, like, oh, great job. Our bidding? You've done it. Thank you. Like George Zimmerman, I'd say, is like a wannabe cop, which is just as bad as a cop, if not a little bit worse.
Yeah, and the history of the cops is the history of wannabe cops, like being you know, vigilantes being enfolded into, or sometimes cracked down on, depending on the sort of how the state is feeling. But yeah, mm-hmm. more the former.
This the discussion of like the differentiation between detectives and cops is something I could go on with forever. Actually, I want to get back into it, but before we start, we've all chosen some and. I know what they are. They are all like cops by like state employed definitions. If we do this episode type again, maybe we'll expand the definition. But for now, we'll stay there. Do we want to talk about any honorable mentions before we present our champions?
Yeah, I have an honorable mention that I think I don't think I could like do a whole episode defense of, but Chris Farley from the movie Airheads. I don't know if you remember the movie Airheads, but
yes.
Brendan Fraser and Adam Sandler and another person and Steve Buscemi are like a band, and they like take over a radio station and hold it hostage to play their single. And they make really absurd demands. Like for some reason, I really remember this is from my childhood. Like this is a movie from the 90s that flopped, but played on Comedy Central constantly. They had all these demands. Like they wanted an arcade cabinet and like a football helmet full of cottage cheese is a detail I've always remembered for some reason. And Chris Farley was like the cop who like gave them all their demands and tried to keep all of the other cops from coming in. And then when the sort of SWAT team attacks, he sort of tries to save them, you know? And I was like, okay, that's like a, you know, he's like a, you know, he's an ally of rock and roll and kidnapping, you know? So I think like that sort of way was, yeah.
That movie deserves a rewatch. That was like anytime it was on when I was a child, I would sit down and watch the rest of it. I remember Chris Farley pulls out in my mind, a Nazi biker's nipple ring, which has stuck with me because it's a very visceral image.
I I winced when you said that.
Yeah, yeah. He's but yeah, he is an ally to rock and roll, and rock and roll is the natural enemy of the cop. So that's a complicated character. If he's not a good cop, he's a compelling figure for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Do you have any, Miriam?
Well, so this is slightly a problem for me because I don't watch cop shows and never have, which does like skew the sort of pool of possible fictional cops I have access to in favor of detectives. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot easier to defend your fictional detectives because they're just more fun. You know, like I could say Benoit Blanc, but like, I don't even feel like I have to defend Benoit Blanc because like, come on.
Yeah. He's definitely of the, like, yeah, he's a detective. He can choose what to withhold and give to the police.
Using the
police as like a resource or sort of like a garbage can, really. It's just like, all right, this person is like, I think we can all agree the person I'm after is like, is a bad guy. All right, you take him. The enemy of my enemy is still my enemy. Can't have too many.
Yeah. I don't even remember if the cops get involved in Glass Onion. I think it's just him and Janelle Monáe ruining Elon Musk's life.
You're right. That's right. Yeah, they aren't involved at all.
Yeah, the worst thing about Benoit Blanc is that he's proud of having had a New Yorker profile. You know, that's like the most embarrassing thing about him.
Well, I had two honorable mentions. Which leaves room if anybody else wants to talk about any. Miriam wrote an entire article about them, so we can come back.
Keeping those in my back pocket.
Yeah, for the sequel. Next episode. I almost chose Seth Bullock from Deadwood.
Sure.
Deadwood's my favorite show. Eventually, I really want to do a full episode on just getting into the nitty gritty of like how brilliant I think that show is. But in a show populated by extremely dense characters, his entire personality is just pissed. He's just an angry man. And in a show about the civilizing effects of community in this unincorporated part of America, there's like so much fun you can do with this guy who desperately doesn't want to be a cop anymore. And he moves to just the frontier to try and not be a cop anymore, but he comes back to it because he's like, all right, the most like manipulative venal bastards are going to be the cop if I don't do it, and if I don't have this rule set put on me, I'm gonna kill somebody. That's interesting. Well,
and that's another like fascinating cop archetype is the that we didn't talk about before is the one in the Western, because the cop in the Western is so often a lawman who's done being a lawman and he doesn't want to be a lawman, but now he has to be a lawman and he's so mad about it. But like, there's just some justice that needs to be done, you know,
that
obviously really using a standard of justice that like, I don't agree with, but I do find that, you know, it's the same as the, you know, the old gangster being pulled in for one last big score. It has that like, I'm too old for this shit vibes. Mm-hmm. And I do love that. It is also notable though, that Seth Bullock is in trying to like escape from being a cop. He does go off onto the Black Hills, had just been granted to the Lakota. It had been promised to the Lakota, not granted. They already had them, but promised to the Lakota, by treaty. So he is there explicitly breaking a treaty. So for him to then call himself a lawman after that is, I think as any character from Deadwood would say, reason for him to go fuck himself.
Yeah. And that's like the great irony about all Westerns, right? Like, is that like, it's this, it gets to play out this whole morality tale as long as you ignore where it's all taking place. Right. Yeah. Like there's like this big, I mean, you know, those early ones are about it explicitly and they fight indigenous people, but like even later ones where they're like, it's so morally and Deadwood is good on that. I'm not trying to accuse Deadwood of anything, but yeah. Deadwood, cops, man.
Deadwood's certainly better than most, but it still is like, you know, I do think truly that Deadwood being canceled after three seasons is the reason God doesn't talk to us anymore. I think if it was given a little more time, I would trust the writers to actually give some Native Americans good, some good storylines. They get a little, they get some like dignity. It's in a Seth Bullock storyline, but definitely not enough for like the whole premise of the story is there on unceded land that the Lakota were just given, but they found gold there. So fuck that. Anyway, we'll get into Deadwood some other time.
I know we got to get off it because like we could talk about this for hours.
I would love to. I can't give into temptation. I almost also chose Nick Valentine from the Fallout games because he is a noir detective. I love noir detectives. He's an android taking on, you know, the classic hat, trench coat. Yeah, see, somebody's got to air out this town's dirty laundry. But he's not a cop by the definition we're using. He's just a gumshoe. And detectives have a choice whether they work with the cops. It's like, a job for people who like finding patterns. And I think that's kind of beautiful. Unfortunately, it is like entwined with law enforcement. I wish I grew up reading Hardy Boys or Nancy Drew. I might have chosen one of... like might have been able to talk a little bit
Encyclopedia
more about
Encyclopedia Brown. Yeah,
because I don't really know.
I tried so hard as a kid to get into the Hardy Boys because they were for boys. And I was like, I'm not going to read Nancy Drew. That's for girls. I didn't know you could be a lesbian then. So I was just like being a tomboy, you know, and then. Yeah. But the thing about the Hardy Boys books is they aren't very good.
Really bad. Yeah. I think like one thing also that like is interesting about like, I think fictional cops in general and like detectives, like the actual sort of puzzle solving detective work that's depicted in like cop shows in general and detectives, like is such a smaller part of what cops actually do. I think that's actually one of the most copagandic effects of like that stuff is just like showing police being like clue finding and solving people like based on real, like, you know, because like, what is it like 90% of solved cases? Like someone just tells them who did it. Like that's always what it is. Right. or like 95%. It's like some absurd percentage. Like cops never solve things from material clues. They just tell, someone just tells them who did it.
It really,
and they fill out paperwork. Yeah.
That would be like, that would be important to just like note that the real propaganda of it is people believing that like cop work is very hard, just sort of like poring over paper, just like, oh, what does it mean? Where's the pattern? Type work rather than them just like fucking off. They're just like, oh, it wasn't handed to me. Well, fuck that then. Like,
yeah, I couldn't beat it out. I couldn't beat it out of the few CIs I already know, like forget it, whatever.
Yeah.
I've got unhoused people to brutalize. What am I going to do trying to find clues?
Yeah, I'll just pin it on some black teenager and call it a day.
Yeah.
But
cops.
Yeah. So there are private detectives, which we have complicated feelings about. And
yeah.
But there are the real detectives, the law detectives, the true detectives.
Ah.
Wow.
For my choice, I chose Rust Cole from season one of True Detective. And I might have chosen him just because it's my favorite cop show by a country mile. And it's set in Louisiana, one of the most beautiful places in America. And I like it when a show makes full use of its setting. I only ever saw like Better Call Saul make just as much use of draping a story across like a really dynamic landscape. The swamp just soaks up these rivers of cosmic horror that are running through the story, and these like long lingering shots of the oil refineries in Cancer Alley, like these big geometric creatures just leaking poison into the environment. It makes the scenery feel so like pensive and desolate and alive and hostile. But none of this is an endorsement of, well, cops at all, but definitely not Louisiana cops. They're some of the stupidest yet most brutal cops in a nation full of stupid and brutal cops, just real swamp hogs. But yeah, why would I choose Rust Cole? Isn't he kind of an asshole? I chose him because, like, for the same reason why I think if billionaires had any dignity, they would all wear robes and like worship a blood god rather than only some of them. If you pursue the career of cop with your eyes open, it's like almost respectable to be this black-pilled psychopath who is animated towards this line of work for like a genuine knack for investigative work like Rust is. Because he kind of seems to take or leave the whole idea of Law and Order. He's driven more by like an excitement for like the opportunity the work provides to bear witness. Like this, like it's a meditation and just a way of avoiding his own grief. He still recognizes that he's a cop and what that means. He says, of course I'm dangerous. I'm police. I can do terrible things to people with impunity. So he's kind of a psycho, but just stick with me. He spent years in deep cover. Sounds like it mostly was just freebasing biker gang crank and living the outlaw life. Now that he's out, he's totally lost and trying to find meaning in this like grating existentialism, looking to fill the void in him that he can't fill with substances anymore. I really love the way he like, I was just rewatching it and he does this thing where he like checks his pulse after like intense moments. Like he's savoring these moments of adrenaline, like he's finally connected to the world. But I chose him because he's like the farthest thing from an ideological cop. He says himself, he wouldn't bust anybody for hooking or drugs. And in fact, the only people he seems to ever treat with dignity in the whole show are sex workers that he's interviewing and buying drugs from. He seems to have no respect for the badge. He thinks company men who have some belief there's nobility in police work are pathetic. He hates other cops. He ditches his partner every chance he can get just because he doesn't want to have his style cramped or because he doesn't like him. And how could you blame him? Woody Harrelson does a great job at being a loathsome guy. It really kind of just feels like he became a cop. He became a detective because it gives him access to more resources to solve his little puzzles, which makes him the Spectacles neurodivergent king of the week. When he's asked why he's a cop, he quotes Leviticus. I should have practiced a McConaughey impression before this. For the body does not consist of one member, but of many. Now are they many, but of one body. He's just trying to stay a part of the body, not spin off from this miserable world. Like he's trying to use the resources, but also like he would be doing this otherwise, but like he needs like a structure, I guess. He has a sense of justice kind of, but he also just kind of obviously wants to feel superior to other people intellectually.
Yep.
If he has any ideology, it's just an aggressive pessimism. He's like, there's no love for like the state or power for its own sake. And you can tell that because he transitions out of police work really easily. And he starts doing all of his pattern solving work pro bono, trying to untangle this web of like QAnon, rich man, child sacrifice, cult shit. All right, here's a few pros and cons.
All right, I'm ready.
All right, pro. He is objectively very cool. He's sassy, he's stoic, he smokes cigarettes. a nihilistic Sherlock Holmes materialist who speaks like a mystic. He has acid flashbacks and is wildly proficient with violence and survivalist shit. He lived like a drugged up undercover for 4 years, and he keeps a big box full of grenades, whiskey, and a bitchin' leather jacket stashed away in case he has to like John Wick, Lord forgive me, it's time to go back to the old me at any moment. I think that's cool. Like a classic, just like badass asshole character. Con, he's a little bit of an epic Reddit atheist type.
Yeah.
But that's nothing compared to being a cop. So let's stay on track here.
All right. Sorry.
Wait, if he's a Reddit atheist, why is he running around quoting Leviticus at people?
Good point.
I know I'm not supposed to be trying to take down your guy in favor of my guy just yet, but I mean, that's a little hypocritical.
No, put like you saw the chinks in my armor.
Well, much the way that a Reddit atheist is actually just like a religious, like a Christian who like doesn't want to, you know, believe in Jesus, right? Yeah. It's like a Christian non-belief, you know, so it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, and I got some.
We can't go down this rabbit hole.
Oh, yeah. Okay, we will have to leave
Deadwood and Reddit atheists for another day.
We're big rabbit chasers here. Yeah.
Notes. Okay. Pro. In the pro column, it's implied that he murdered a Louisiana super preacher, Jerry Falwell type. It is definitely shown that he B&E's his many houses to steal evidence. He's in a child sacrifice cult. That's cool to me. Con, he is 100% the type of character socially stunted masculinity influencers make YouTube videos about, classifying him as like a Sigma male or something. I was looking up a few like scenes from it preparing for this episode, and that there was a lot of those. I like started watching one because it was like the philosophy of Rust, and I was just like, oh, well, maybe something I didn't notice, because to me it just seems like a run of the mill sort of weird like guy who read a lot of like Machio Kiku, like. That's just a pessimist. But no, it was just like, I think it's cool that he thinks humanity is a disease. And I'm like, okay, I gotta go. Pro, he fights cops. He's injured more cops than probably most of the people living. So let's get those numbers up, people. Con, he's a total asshole and I would hate hanging out with him.
Yeah.
Pro, he's economical. He starts drinking during his interrogation, which is two birds with one stone. You get to get drunk and make everything that you say inadmissible in court. He's a smart cookie.
That is smart.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was a really, really cool touch. I didn't notice until the last watch I did. This is just a cute moment. He returns to the outlaw life and he like meets up with his old biker friend who like taps out some coke or that he like has cut with something, and he puts it on the part between his thumb and his index finger, and Russ like takes him by the hand and like snorts it off of his hand. It's very intimate. Anyway, I just thought that was a cute little scene. but okay, the reason I chose Russ Cole, this total prick, is because he is a self-negating choice. If the conceit of this vote is which cop is spared the wall, I don't think that Rust would seek amnesty. He says, I contemplate the moment in the garden, the idea of allowing your own crucifixion. I really feel that death would be a deliverance to him. He lacks the constitution for suicide. This world is a thresher. He doesn't want to be inhabiting this meat. Like, if were there to be a massive societal upheaval where cops are put up against the wall, I bet he'd be like, yeah, man, can't have bad men like me in the new world. Like, see, that is an honest way out. He doesn't want to race to a red light.
It was a pretty good McConaughey.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad.
Thanks. Self-taught. but yeah, that's my choice. Did either of you watch True Detective?
I did watch True Detective, and I in fact rewatched a bit of it for this podcast, because like, you know, I mean, I'm nothing if not responsible. I'm also reading some of the novels that that Miriam's character, I'm sorry, spoiler, is going to come from. But yeah, I mean, I rewatched it, and he was worse than I remembered. I was sort of like, oh no, like what happened?
As a guy, or like McConaughey's acting?
No, McConaughey's great. No, okay. as a guy, he was even worse than I remembered.
Yeah,
he's incredibly violent to some suspects he has in his power in a way that I was like, well, that's a bit disqualifying for the one good cop, I think. But I did enjoy revisiting it. Although I still think that the first half of that season sets up way better than it concludes in the end. But
yeah,
that's my helpful critique of this. I like some of it more.
Yeah, it is. It is a better show before they go full cosmic horror spookiness, when it's just sort of like an underlying, just like, wait, what's going on? occulty stuff. That's a lot of fun. I still think it's like better than most television all the way through. And the newer season of True Detective, they're really leaning on the first season in some ways that I think are kind of corny and kind of fun, but like whatever. It's one of my favorite micro genres, the first season, Crisis Masculinity. Like Woody Harrelson's portrayal of this regular dipshit who wants a family only half the time. Like, oh, there's such a burden in authority. I got to cheat on my wife but have her be nice to me all the time and beat up some teenagers who my daughter wanted to DP her. And this is such a brutal scene. He like puts a belt buckle on his hand and beats up these teenagers but yeah, Rust is just this emotionally detached, wound so tight, but total basket case after his daughter died. It's like sort of Zen, really. He's like turned completely outward as this like rationalist who can't feel anything. And like, of course, the show like doesn't have good women characters. There's a pretty cringy representation of like what life is like in the projects.
That episode's real bad.
That episode's hard.
Yeah.
Like the first time I watched it, I was like, wow, a great continuous shot. Huh. These guys seem to have never met a black person in their life.
That's rough. I have not watched this show, by the way.
It's good, but it's not perfect for sure. That's my guy.
But it sounds like you're not nominating him for not getting the wall. It sounds like you and he are both fine with him getting the wall.
Yeah, it seems like you've put forward someone who we don't need to worry about like saving because he's happy to die.
I think that seemed fair to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Down to both of you. Good luck. The odds be ever in your favor. Over here smoking cigarettes.
Why don't you go, Miriam? Because I think.
All right. Yeah. So I have brought as my offering Sam Vimes from Terry Pratchett's Discworld novels. Sam Vimes is not just a cop. He is actually the commander of the Ankh-Morpork City Watch. Mm-hmm. And the reason that I think that he is good, he doesn't hate cops like Io's entry does, but he does get mad at almost every cop he ever interacts with and make them stop doing things that I consider cop shit. Because fundamentally, he sees the role of the cop, or at least his role, as protecting those without power from those with power. This belief of his leads him to, at one point, arrest the leader of the city. It at one point leads him to arrest two armies that are about to have a war for conspiracy to cause a breach of the peace. It leads to him fighting on the barricades during an uprising in the city. Through the power of time travel, he actually fights on those barricades twice. And he burns the offices of the secret police to the fucking ground.
Wow.
Damn. Okay.
So, like, that rules.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Also, things that he has going for him, he's also like very much on my side, I think, in the class war. He really hates aristocracy. He really hates the wealthy. It is to his deepest shame and frustration that over the course of the novels, he marries into the nobility and then keeps getting awarded further noble titles by the leader of the city, who is kind of trolling him. So he ends up a duke by the end of the series, which he just hates so much. he's a wife guy also. So despite his frustration with the fact that his wife is a member of the aristocracy, he is just a hardcore wife guy, which I find fairly charming. But in a sense, he's a polyamorous wife guy because his first and true love will always be the city itself. The city of Ankh-Morpork. The one of his defining traits as a character, and this ties into the whole class warfare thing, is that from years of wearing cheap boots when out on patrol, his feet have grown to know the feeling of the cobblestones of the city so well that he can tell where he is by the feel of the stones under his feet. He can identify where exactly he is in the city at any given time, which is great. It also ties into what actual economists have started talking about, as articulated in the books, the Samuel Vimes Boots theory of economic unfairness, which is a theory that he explains as a really good pair of boots costs $50. That's more than he makes in a month. He cannot afford a $50 pair of boots. Those boots would last for decades and keep his feet warm and dry the whole time. So instead, he buys okay boots, which cost $5, and the soles are kind of made of cardboard and glue, and they wear out immediately. But what this means, because those shoes only last maybe 6 months, is that he's buying boots continuously. Whereas if he'd had the $50 for boots at the outset, he would have spent only $50. He's spending hundreds of dollars in boots over the years, and he still has wet feet. And that is the Sam Vimes Boots theory of economic unfairness, that the rich spend less money to get better lives, while the poor spend more money to have worse lives. And he's right. And that's actually pretty fucking good analysis.
Yeah.
And he rules. And let me also say, there's a couple other things going on here. In addition to being on our side in the class war, he's also on our side against monarchy. Because one thing Sam Vimes is a committed anti-monarchist. He is very proud of the fact that he is descended from the Discworld's version of Oliver Cromwell, basically a guy who is known to history as Stoneface Vimes. His name in sort of the Puritan mold is Suffer Not Injustice Vimes, which is also pretty cool. And he's like Cromwell without the anti-Irish stuff, or the Puritanism, really. His name is the only Puritan thing about him. But he personally beheaded the king of Ankh-Morpork the last time they had a king. Okay. Personally did it with his own hands, because after the rest of the city voted that they should behead the king, nobody actually wanted to do it. And he was basically like, well, I'm not just going to sit here and let a tyrant's head sit on a tyrant's shoulders. And he beheaded the king his damn self. Vimes doesn't ever do that, but he'd like to. Part of the reason he never ever does that is that his city doesn't have a king. And part of the reason it doesn't have a king is that, now, because the Discworld novels are fantasy novels, there is a rightful heir to the throne of Ankh-Morpork. And, you know, he has a magic sword and a birthmark shaped like a crown and is like naturally charismatic and everybody loves him. And in a regular old fantasy novel, you know, he's Aragorn, he's Return of the King, he becomes King of Ankh-Morpork. But this is a fucking Discworld novel and Sam Vimes is there. So instead of doing all that, that guy comes to Ankh-Morpork, becomes a watchman, meets Sam Vimes, and decides he would rather just go around and try to make the city a better place and not try to be king, because Sam Vimes convinces him that kings are a terrible idea. Later, there's a conspiracy in the city to appoint a puppet king by some aristocrats who are fucking around. And the person that they select to be their puppet king doesn't go along with their plan, explicitly because Sam Vimes would be very, very mad about it. And he doesn't want to make Sam Vimes very, very mad. So, anti-monarchist, working class hero, a cop, but only technically. I'm here for Sam Vimes. He doesn't smoke cigarettes. He does smoke cigars. he just pisses off rich people at every possible opportunity. And I think that that's great.
Yeah, truly the seems like the like platonic ideal of what people imagine cops could be.
He is, but I mean, I think what makes it not copaganda because I think like a lot of fictional cops are the ideal of what people think cops should be. But like Sam Vimes knows that he's not the way regular that he's not the way cops are. And he only gets to be the way he is through several novels worth of development and change and like existing in a world that doesn't have a prison industrial complex, but also like, I mean, and don't get me wrong, he does believe in retributive justice in a way that I don't. But the reason that I don't feel like he's copaganda is because there's never any implication that regular or real cops are like him. And the only reason other cops in Ankh-Morpork are like him is because he'll kick their ass if they aren't. And I think that that's, you know, that that sort of keeps it from being, I've never seen any, I mean, not that I've like looked, but I've never seen any like pro cop stuff reference Sam Vimes. I don't think cops like Sam Vimes, although I don't think cops can read. So, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard to say.
They seem more Dan Brown rather than Terry Pratchett.
Yeah. I mean, he also, like, when I say, you know, he changes and develops, one of those things is he changes in terms of he starts the books with quite a lot of, you know, fantasy racism. He doesn't like werewolves. He doesn't like dwarfs. He doesn't like vampires. He doesn't like all the, and by the end of the series, he's working with, not only working with all of those people, but he is like a very good ally in his work supporting female dwarfs who are, in the context of Terry Pratchett books, kind of trans analog characters, or, because as in many fantasy novels, like all dwarves present as male. But then in the Terry Pratchett books, there's this whole movement where a lot of dwarves start openly identifying as female and presenting as female in public. And that's like not okay in dwarf culture. And the reaction to them is very, I don't think it was written as like, you know, an allegory, but it is, there's a lot of resonance there. And Sam Vimes is like one of the many characters who will kick your ass if you misgender one of his dwarf friends. So, you know, he's got that going for him too.
Yeah. Sort of a great man theory of one police force. You make a great case for Sam Vimes. I also like, what is it that, because he was a drunk for a long time, and they said that like his body didn't produce any natural alcohol. Like he was always like two drinks below where he was should be.
Yes. Like, in Terry Pratchett parlance, he's knurred naturally, which is drunk spelled backwards. And then trying to to like homeostasis, he always, you know, overshoots and therefore becomes an alcoholic. But he actually quits drinking very early in the series. And that is like one of the other sort of things about his character is that he is in recovery and finds a lot in that to bond with a lot of vampire characters are also sort of abstaining from their preferred
drug of choice
to drink. And that's another one of his sort of character beats that I enjoy.
We love a sober king. You gotta love it. Yeah.
Well, we love a sober king, but Sam Vimes would cut his fucking head off.
Right. Exactly.
Sober, so drunk, again, doesn't matter.
I don't know if he gets the wall or not. I do know that when the revolution came, he was canonically on the side of the revolution and did burn the secret police station to the fucking ground.
My God, this really sets him up for success.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I think like, you know, my choice is definitely effective copaganda. I think, unfortunately, I don't think I can claim that he's not, but that's okay. Cause he's TV's most perfect boy, FBI agent Dale Cooper, from the series Twin Peaks, which was a show in a sort of mystery show, made by David Lynch, in like 1989 and 1990, that then came back in 2018 for a third season. And that is a, sort of cult classic of weird surrealism. Sorry, I just immediately moved in, Miriam. I don't mean to.
No, you're good. You got that? Okay, cool. I want to hear about this.
Okay, great. Dale Cooper is an FBI agent, which, as we know, is the most cop you can be, basically.
Yeah, like double cop.
He's a double cop. He comes to the small town of Twin Peaks, Washington, which is just on the border with Canada, to solve the murder of Laura Palmer, who is an 18-year-old girl who has been killed and turns out to have a much more spicy and sort of dangerous life in the underworld of the community that Dale Cooper and the investigation kind of unravel in this seemingly sort of charming small town. It's classic David Lynch, right? There's this beautiful Americana small town. Everyone seems like happy on the surface. And you like look a little deeper and like everything is like rife with abuse and exploitation and violence. You know, just classic stuff and very true to form. And real. So Dale Cooper is just the most innocent, earnest man who has ever been on television. He is like, you know, he's just genuinely curious about the world. The first thing we see about him is like that he's excited about the cherry pie and the coffee that he's having at these diners in the Northwest. He's excited to learn about the trees. You know, he pauses during I think the very early scene, the autopsy of Laura Palmer, to ask about what kind of trees they are. He's just like, he's just genuinely this like person who's like very like almost naive, innocent, like open to the world in a way that's almost the exact opposite of Rust Cole, right? Who's this like very like hardened, cynical. Mm-hmm. And Dale Cooper's like really, so first of all, just the aesthetics, you know, he's just also not neurotypical, I think, very clearly not, not really doing the standard sort of behavioral stuff, but incredibly charismatic. Like everyone around him loves him, but like there's instances where it's more than just him being likable and strange. Like there is, the dispatcher at the police station, Lucy, she has a tendency to talk too much, go on and on and on and sort of over explain in detail. And at a few points during the series, one of the other cops impatiently shuts her up and Dale like shuts them down and tells her like, no, 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 like speak. We need to hear everything you have to say. At one point we learn that he's an anti-colonial organizer. He takes part in the Free Tibet campaign when he's not doing his work for the FBI. He also sort of like, although one of his other friends is like another FBI, sort of a CSI guy from the big city, whose name I am now obviously forgetting, because why would that be available to me immediately when I need it? But anyway, so that guy's kind of a jerk. And when he comes into the small town and starts harassing everyone, Dale Cooper actually defends him. And at one point, the local sheriff Truman even punches, Albert, the FBI guy, for being an ass. And, Dale Cooper refuses to tell the rest of the FBI about it and refuses to pursue his case and says, no, you deserve to be hit, in the face. So in many ways, he's an arbiter of a certain kind of justice and fairness. Also, for people who haven't watched Twin Peaks, there is a character in it played by Sherilyn Fenn named Aubrey, Aubrey Horn, who is an 18-year-old. She's a senior in the high school who has maybe the best high femme gender in all of 90s television. I think probably is the greatest high femme. One of the best genders ever depicted on television or indeed anywhere. She's amazing. And she is very horny for Dale Cooper, who is the sort of 30, you know, young man cop. And in a normal cop show, right, like they would sort of get together, but there'd be conflict. But she sort of like, she throws herself at Dale Cooper. She even shows up in his bed and he's like, nope, you're too young, but I genuinely want a friendship with you. He like pursues a friendship with her. He helps her like investigate the case, but he like refuses her sexual advances on the basis that it wouldn't be appropriate in terms of their power dynamic, which I think is like, you know, a real... he's a real violation of traditional cop masculinity, which some of the other cops in the show really like have in spades, including Sheriff Turner is very like, mm-hmm. you know, very like he's a cop, you know, kind of guy, even though he's nice and fun. He's not my choice because of his. So that's 2 points in his favor. One, Aubrey's in love with him and Aubrey has the best gender ever. So, you know, she must have great taste. Yeah. And two, he is wise enough to not go for it and has enough ethics to turn down the greatest gender of all time, which is, you know, wrong objectively in some ways, but like also, you know, I think it reflects a great source of character, a great wealth of character, you know.
Boy, mm-hmm. the bar for straight men is just under fucking ground.
The floor. In the fucking floor, yeah. It was, absolutely.
He wasn't just like, oh, well, you're 18? All right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's actually not a creep. Like, he is the greatest cop ever to play on television.
Too much.
He respected a woman's autonomy. He is truly the greatest who ever lived.
He's a saint.
also, this is a bit of a spoiler. So I know, Aya, you're in the process of watching Twin Peaks for the first time, so I don't want to spoil it. But just suffice to say that we learn in season three that in fact he has done he has made a really, really intense personal sacrifice to protect, in the sort of surrealist and magical way that the series happens, the characters of the show. So he isn't just a happy cop anymore. He has like so invested in the community that he has made a huge sacrifice to protect everyone who's left in the community and in honor of the dead teenager he's investigating. So yeah, that's sort of my Dale Cooper. Dale Cooper is one of the only TV cops who is better than the actor who portrays him, because he's played by Kyle MacLachlan, who has turned out to be a total fucking creep and an asshole, which is very sad.
Oh, no.
But usually, not you know, Paul usually. Deep. Yeah, afraid so. That's Dale Cooper. He loves coffee so much. And I feel like it's way before like coffee guy was an identity. Mm. Like this was like when coffee was just like a really normal thing. Like I feel like now that's less fun. But when I first encountered him, it was like loving coffee, diners, and cherry pie. Like it's just a good aesthetic. Just a good vibe.
I do love diners. Like honestly, yeah. That's something I really feel like I could vibe with him on. I absolutely love a 24-hour diner. Like the kind with the desserts in the glass case.
Oh yeah, rotating baby.
Oh my god,
it's the best.
Yeah,
the best. I love a diner so much.
You ever seen Joe Parra Talks With You?
Yes. Oh yeah, love that show. What's the difference?
Highly recommend the episode where Joe Parra picks out breakfast with you or something.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's where he asks the question: what's the difference between a diner and a family restaurant? At first, it seems obvious, but the more you think about it, the harder it is to to nail down. Right? love that guy.
Excellent show. I love that guy. But Dale Cooper is. I am watching Twin Peaks for the first time. About 10 years ago. I mean, everyone I know, everyone I trust, loves Twin Peaks. I tried watching it after a breakup. I was very sad 10 years ago. And I got to a point where Laura Palmer's dad is like spinning on a dance floor, just shouting, "Somebody dance with me." And I was like, this is too much for me right now. Very, very heavy the first few episodes. And now I've come back to it. And I finished the first season earlier today.
Ooh.
Still got some to go, but I'm in it. I do love Dale Cooper. He has the demeanor of David Byrne. He's like a weird little alien.
Weird little guy. Definitely weird little guy.
Yeah, but and he has the person like he interacts with the world like an absolute dullard would, but he's a genius. Like he's good, like good cop stuff. It does, like, I was thinking earlier today about that show and about the cops that he's interacting with and why he seems to, like, come from a world, like, the FBI world and be really charmed by small towns, by the small town cops in the small town life, despite all of the, like, abuse underneath the surface. And I thought about when I go up to Alaska, I hang with this paramedic in a small town who we were talking about like what their year has been like. And they apologized to me because they didn't want me to think that I was defending that she was defending the idea of cops by speaking highly of the ones that she sees often, which is like a sweet idea. But like, we talked a lot about like the difference somebody invested with authority in an urban or suburban environment has versus a rural one. I think the power you got to crave to want to become a cop has like maybe a shadow of a chance of staying in check if you have actual relationships with a community. I really doubt most small town cops, if any, do, even in an ideal world. But I don't agree with the idea of policing even in an ideal world. So let's get off. I don't want to get off on a rant here. I'm not building.
No, but I think like I have a friend who's, you know, an abolitionist, but their dad is a cop, you know, and like that just happens to people sometimes. But even, you know, their dad is a small town cop who like did a lot of from England, from like the north of England. And like there was more community stuff to what he did than the other cops. And all of the small town cops in the UK hate the London cops and think they're absolute brutal thugs, you know, or whatever is what they say about them, which does not excuse them or their behavior. But I think like there is a fantasy of a community police person being just more like someone who shows up when things are really bad, which is in fact not something a cop needs to be. We don't need cops for that at all, obviously. But I do think that fantasy is sort of operating in Dale Cooper and this Twin Peaks Police Department for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And that fantasy is maybe pointing to a non-cop structure in some ways, or is capturing some of the energy of sort of like a non-cop based community, and putting it into the fantasy of police.
Yeah. It's like, what would your job on the commune be? I'd solve puzzles. I'd look for mysteries and then, pore over them in little rooms and occasionally brutalize people over it.
I mean, that's the thing. Like if what your job on the commune would be solving puzzles, like, there is no reason that has to come with brutalizing people, right? Like,
exactly.
And that's, you know, even, you know, and even if we're not trying to go too far into like a utopian situation, like where, you know, even if we're imagining a world where violence will sometimes need to be used to solve problems, there is no reason to have the person who is good at solving puzzles also be the person who sometimes might need to use violence, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think goes back to like our focus on detectives rather than, you know, cops. And it sounds like Dale Cooper, because I have also not watched this, I didn't do any homework.
Wow. The real abolitionist. It's not even, yeah.
Pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
I was busy smoking behind the gym.
Wow, radical.
That made him so cool.
You know, I haven't seen it, but it does sound like he is more on the detective. And like, I wonder if there's also like a lot of the people that people will name when you ask like who's their favorite fictional cop are FBI agents and not cops. If they're people who actually like work for law enforcement, right? If they're not like
Benoit
Blanc or whatever, you know, Scully and Mulder work for the FBI,
yes.
Right? You got a lot of FBI agents. And I think part of why that works for people is that we see cops most of the time and very few of us see FBI agents on a daily basis. You know, if your life is going well, you probably never meet an FBI agent.
Right.
Probably many of us either have or have people in our lives who have had unfortunate interactions involving FBI agents showing up at their house. But
unfortunately,
that's not a, you know, the average TV watcher, even the average TV watcher with pretty, you know, with any form of politics is much more likely to have a negative interaction from a cop than from an FBI agent. People see cops all the time. And if you see cops all the time, one of the things you're going to notice is that they're assholes a lot of the time, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But if you don't see FBI agents, except on TV, then you can like believe whatever you can have the fantasy given to you because you don't have a pre-existing like real life image of them to take the place of that. Like you can know it intellectually. Like you can be like, oh, FBI agents, you mean the guys who are sending Martin Luther King letters telling him to kill himself, right? Like, and most people know that, I think, at this point, right? You know, like most people know the FBI is bad. People know the FBI is bad, but they don't meet the FBI every day. They don't, like, the FBI doesn't pull them over.
Exactly.
When they're driving home.
Yeah,
exactly. And I think this is like, and like one thing you see over and over again in fiction with the FBI is that they're in conflict with the local police. Even when the local police are kind of the good guys, they're always like, there's this implication that they're different and like above, and that there's some sort of check on police power, you know, in one way or another. And that can be spun. Yeah. But I think like that deepens that sort of that fantasy that they're not really like police. They're not the same as police.
They're supposed to be smart. There is this assumption that the FBI agents are smart. I have seen no real world evidence of that, but that's like always the conceit in fiction, right? If you have the sort of archetype of like the cop versus the archetype of the Fed, the FBI guy is like, he wears a suit. He's smart. He know, you know, he's a fancy cop. Go ahead.
You almost think of him as like one step below a James Bond or something.
Right.
Yeah. He's
a secret agent almost.
Yeah. He's a not secret agent.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I really liked, I just thought of that show Mindhunter, and maybe it's just because I hate cops naturally, but the whole time I was like, oh, this show's just this little boy and this like totally like cop brained FBI agent talking to Charles Manson and like the Night Stalker and stuff. It's great.
I mean, if we're going to get into at all, like the whole structure of copaganda, to me, like one of the big things that copaganda does is actually like you were talking about before, that the idea that like cops solve crimes, but like specifically the idea, and this is like, not just cop fiction, but like the true crime industrial complex is so big into the idea that like on any given day, we have about a 30% chance of being murdered by a serial killer, right? That's sort of the premise. That's the premise they start from. And that serial killer, by the way, he's a fucking genius, you know? Yeah. And it's going to take a really tough, really smart bunch of cops pulling all-nighters and like drinking coffee and putting lines on boards, connecting pieces of paper to track down this genius who's murdering like, you know, just thousands of people. On any given day are being lost to serial killers. And like, none of that's fucking true. That like, we know that's not true. We know that cops not only don't catch serial killers particularly effectively, but like have been known to, for example, escort one of Jeffrey Dahmer's victims back to his apartment to get murdered by him. Mm-hmm. Like we know that when serial killers get caught, it is usually because one of their victims is able to escape and tell everybody what happened. Yep. And like, also and we know,
maybe believe that, them.
Yeah. If you know, there was just recently, I read a story where a woman went on a date with some guy and stole an SD card from his car. And it turned out to contain like video evidence of him committing serial murders.
Wow.
Which like just shows you should do petty crime all the time.
You should steal
It'll
from
save your dates. Fucking life.
Women, start stealing from your Tinder dates.
Exactly. The whole true crime conceit, right, is like all that's standing between us and serial killer annihilation is these cops. And like, you know, and that elevates both the cop and the serial killer.
Yep.
In ways neither deserve.
This is a really good, really good point. The thing doing the bulk of copaganda these days is totally true crime. And in the same way that like the military bankrolls the like Call of Duty, like war game industry, I'm sure that like fraternal orders of polices and stuff have like financed CSI in the past. I wonder how much like My Favorite Murder is getting from police organizations.
Cop funds. Yeah.
I mean, it has to be huge because and this is like a sort of more nebulous connection, but I do think that the mindset behind that true crime genre is like fundamentally one of fear. And that mindset is what drives this kind of authoritarianism and the idea that like, well, obviously you need a state and you need a prison system and you need police because the danger that exists without them is so horrifying. And like, I don't think you get to authoritarianism and fascism without that level of fear.
Yep. No, I think that's exactly right. Yeah. And like, I think that's like that calling out true crime as like that vector right now is like so important. And like, I think it also like the fantasy of intelligence that's like being presented and about sort of solving also is part of what fuels conspiracy theory stuff like QAnon, right? They all imagine themselves as detectives in this mold of like a police, like a TV FBI agent, right? They think that there's like a series of a string of clues. Like if you believe power operates the way that cops uncover in these shows, then you also believe that it operates the way QAnon believes power operates. It's a conspiratorial, it's not just the fear, which I think you're absolutely right, is absolutely crucial. It's also like about the way that you imagine power works, which is like a few individuals like secretly and sinisterly making a plan and like buying people off or whatever, rather than the much more frustratingly diffuse modes of, for example, raising generation after generation of people on hour upon hour upon hour of copaganda so that they think cops are good. A sort of dispersed and indirect way.
Or the source of violence, and especially against the straight women who mostly, you know, consume this stuff, is these sort of mythologized murderers and not their fucking romantic partners who statistically are the ones who murder them, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, and that's right. The QAnon fantasy too is the same. Like it's the same shit. It's like the vast majority of child abuse is someone from within the family or within the household. Just the vast, vast majority. But stranger danger, like, is this huge thing that drives all of these right wing culture war stuff, like in the 80s and 90s, right? Like a bunch of the gay panic and satanic panic like overlapped, right? And like now you get it in QAnon again. It's real classic, like pretending that the problem is elsewhere in order to defend the place where the problem really comes from.
Right. Because you can't defend the family if you admit that the family is where danger is.
Exactly.
So danger has to come from those seeking to destroy the family, which is, you know, the gays, which is true. I mean, we are, but.
My wife literally wrote a book called "Abolish the Family." Like it's real. Like it's a good book. Conspiracy is real. Hey, yeah, I think so too. I'm real proud of her. I think it's an awesome book. But yeah.
Big ups to Sophie.
Big ups to Sophie. Shout outs to Sophie.
Yeah, we're thinking of it. If the family's not worth defending, then what are we defending? And like, if we're coming to these things for entertainment, it really relies on us being self-satisfied in our position away from there's a little bit of fear because like, oh, maybe we could dip into it, but we're not in immediate threat, but we have to maintain our position in this family rather than like, oh, my husband could have a bad day or yeah, there's no... I don't dip into true crime a lot, but it does really seem to focus on, you know, crazy drifter type archetypes rather than the main bulk of like women being murdered by their husbands or people in their lives or just like cops.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever heard of a successful true crime thing that deals with like the thousands of cop rapes or murders or weird trafficking rings that they have to do with, which are like,
that wouldn't be true crime. That would be politics. That's the difference.
Ooh, that's when it gets political.
Yeah.
Damn, Vicky. This is a little, like, I kind of wanted to get into, we're running too long, so I won't, but I feel as though the first season of True Detective had a hand in the way that QAnon developed in these like rich men child worshiping child sacrifice like devil worshiping cults type thing, that they like saw that and they're like, oh, that really happens.
I mean, that's what QAnon says about anything, like literally any movie, any TV show, any fucking music video. If it's like, they're just like, yeah, no, that's real though. And it's like, guys, I mean,
The only things that aren't real are medical scientific research into vaccines and statistics about racism. Those are not real.
Yeah, and also pictures of the Earth from space. Also not real.
Not real.
Much of it is just flat. But I did see a music video, and I feel like Jonathan Davis from Korn was trying to give me secret messages that he could control bullets with his scatting. 90s.
I mean, do we know that that's not the case?
Yeah, where's the facts that that is not the truth? And I will accept it as the truth until Jonathan Davis proves that he can't control bullets by going boom daka oom da da gida.
Honestly, that's the only evidence I've ever had is that he can. So, yeah. You know, believe your eyes, you know, trust your eyes.
Yeah, trust your eyes. Do your own research. I did.
Do your own research.
On Total Request Live. Anyway, good talk. Maybe we should try and put these motherfuckers up against the wall and kill them.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's go.
Rust Cole, what do you have to say for yourself? Something about it's all one big ghetto, giant gutter in outer space. All right, that's enough out of you. Click, click, boom.
Somebody have a cigarette first. We don't give him a last cigarette.
Oh, I put a whole pack in his mouth.
Okay.
I wish I had a gunshot sound effect queued up. We'll have proper.
We'll do it in post.
All right. Both of you have made very, very compelling cases. What do you feel? How do you feel about each other's choices?
I mean, honestly, like Miriam's, you know, choice just feels like the platonic ideal of the cop that abolishes himself as cop.
Yeah.
And like, you know, like maybe the only argument I can really muster for like Dale Cooper being a better choice is that like maybe Sam Vines is actually like too much of an anti-cop to really be a cop, but he has the job of watchman the whole time. So I can't really claim that. I mean, I haven't read all the books, but I presume he just stays.
Oh, he definitely, is forced to hand in his badge at some point, but like, you know, he gets it back. As is standard in cop stories at some point.
Yeah, exactly. Dale Cooper also gets suspended and fired at one point.
That's actually, as fictional cops go, that's just part of the gig.
Cops never get fired.
No, real cops famously never get fired.
Unfireable. Yeah.
They're trying their asses off, it seems.
Getting fired is one of the many skills they don't seem to have.
They lack, yeah.
I think I agree. I think Sam Vimes does seem to like almost transcend like out of the muck of being a cop almost into almost like being a real person again. But
Sam Vimes sounds like a real person. Like Dale Cooper is very much not a real person, you know? Yeah.
Dale Cooper remains a legitimate military target while Sam Vimes is.
Sam Vimes will help you build a better barricade. He really will. He doesn't have a lot of time to listen to revolutionary sloganeering, but he does have some thoughts on barricade construction, and he will do a good job.
You know,
you got to respect it. I'm so sorry, Dale. This is a wonderful cup of coffee. Enjoy it. It's nice and hot.
If it's any consolation, that gum you like is going to come back in style.
It's coming back into style. Goodbye. Mr. Cooper.
Oh, wait. You say he's been shot before? Oh, he's getting up. He's running away. Oh, stay tuned.
Saved by the genre.
the thing that he did have working in his corner, Dale Cooper has a lot working in his corner, but the big thing was I was like, I feel like this is the one that like people listening to it are just like, Dale's the one I want.
Yeah.
When I've been talking about this premise, the ones that have come up the most are Dale Cooper and Mulder and Scully. Mulder and Scully, I can't get behind. Dale, yeah, I could see it. Sam Vimes just inched him out, though.
I was it's dark horse from the world of literature. You know, I feel like books. You know, they could have more. They have a lot less. More space to not just be propaganda in some ways.
Yeah, true. Books have a lot going for them. I mean, the fact that cops can't access them is huge.
that's the written word. Check it out.
he There was some discussion of the actors who played your cops. Sam Vimes has not, to my knowledge, been played. He might have been a side character in some of the movie adaptations, but I can't remember who played him. In my mind, I would cast Samuel L. Jackson, because I just think he would be good in that role. And his name is Sam, and that's kind of cool.
Hey, saves a lot of effort.
But there, you know, I would hear arguments for other guys. What's that guy? You know, that actor, real grizzled looking. You know, oh man, we can edit out this.
Clint Eastwood. Yet.
I've heard definitely not Clint Eastwood.
That would be funny.
Clint Eastwood's an IRL cop for sure.
Yeah.
No, I was thinking of Tommy Lee Jones is who I was thinking
of.
Okay. That would be good. I mean, he did a good job in No Country for Old Men. As a cowboy. A cowboy hat wearing modern cop is its own genre in and of itself.
I thought briefly about he's a piece of shit and I could never make the argument. But the Marshal from Justified, what's his name, played by Timothy Oliphant. It's a great character.
Two Timothy Oliphants.
Two Oliphants.
Yeah.
Good at cop. I haven't seen that one, but you know, I trust
Justified. It's pretty good. But his whole thing is that he's actually kind of a cowboy and he just murders people in cold blood. It's just really hard to argue for him. The whole point of the series, is in fact that he's quite corrupt. He's quite morally corrupt.
Is it called Justified because he is not in fact justified?
We have a whole bit. I was watching it with my partner and we just kept doing in the first episode, like they keep talking about how his killing of a drug boss kingpin was justified or whatever, so we would just say, oh yeah, he was justified. They only say it in the first episode, but we say it in every episode whenever we watch it.
I haven't seen that show either, but I have seen the cameo that Timothy Oliphant as that character makes on The Good Place.
Okay.
Oh, that's him, huh?
Yeah,
that's just Timothy Oliphant.
I mean, it's Timothy Oliphant, but the judge has been watching a lot of The Good Place, not The Good Place, has been watching a lot of Justified. So I think we're supposed to, like, he's wearing a cowboy hat and everything.
Raylan
Givens, that's his name. Yeah.
I really know him from, I'm sure I've seen him in something else, but yeah, Deadwood. Where he's another cowboy hat wearing cop.
That's literally the reason I watched Justified. Because of Deadwood. So
I saw him in a really bad action movie where he played like a hitman. I think the movie might have been called Hitman.
Oh dear. The one that's like based on the video game or whatever.
Oof. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I have seen that movie. It was
I'm so sorry.
At least 15 years ago, and I was real drunk. But I do remember that it wasn't good. But he wasn't a cop in that movie, so
I do really enjoy getting just shit hammered and watching like video game adapted to movies things like the Assassin's Creed movie. Maybe
is that Jake Gyllenhaal? No, that's Prince of Persia. Is Jake Gyllenhaal?
Yeah.
Who is it in the Assassin's Creed movie?
Oh, what's his name?
It looks so bad. Sorry,
movies where guys run up walls.
Omar from Assassin's Creed. He just died. Why can't I not remember his name? Embarrassing. Anyway, rest in peace, good actor whose name I cannot remember right now. He's not the main character, but he's the only one I remember being good in it. I don't know if it's a good movie or not, but I had a great time.
Yeah. There are very few. It's one of the most cursed genres of movies is video game adaptation.
Yeah, you're really setting yourself up for failure. I wonder if there was any good ones. I'm sure if we thought about it.
And is there a video game adaptation where the main character is a cop? If we can try to take it back to where we started.
No, I mean, well, there aren't a lot of cop video games, actually, weirdly. They're not as common. Like, soldiers are very common, but cops are not that common in video games, I feel like.
Yeah,
okay, that's interesting. Why do we think that is?
It's not fun to be a cop.
You're like, where's the button to quit and get a real job?
Yeah, there's no joy to be had as a cop. Like there is a sense of power over other people that I'm sure makes the job very alluring to psychos and bastards. But doesn't really feel like something that's like super fun. I mean, there's like those,
I guess,
old timey, like fighting the mob. What is it? Like I don't know. There was a VR game where you're like sort of a noir detective cop.
There's a video game. I know very little about video games, but I did once spend an afternoon watching other people play a game called LA Noir.
That's
where you're a cop. Yep. And that was a lot of fun because like it was basically just a detective movie. But if you yelled at the characters on the screen, sometimes they did what you said because the person controlling them was in the room with me.
I think the characters in Overwatch are technically cops, but they are all fighting each other. So it's really like not very meaningful. Yeah, it's just not a very fun. I mean, I know there are like cop games, like there's one cop game where you like play like whatever. There are a few of them, but they're people would rather be a soldier than a cop. Yeah. If you're actually inhabiting them, which is a.
My favorite video game of all time is a cop game. It was actually a cop I was thinking about bringing to this, but I think someday B and I are going to do an entire episode on this video game. Disco Elysium is a cop game, a like sort of detective game set like 50 years after a failed communist revolution in a like weird, whatever. It's great. Everyone go play it. But yeah, not a lot of cop video games. Good point.
Time Crisis. You're a time cop in the Time Crisis light gun shooting games.
Yeah.
Well, in the arcade, which are my favorite.
Wait, are time cops cops?
Yes. Come on. I'm not splitting hairs.
Yeah, that's fair. I know we are running long, but I did want to bring up a character who I couldn't bring myself to list as a good fictional cop. Even though he is a character on one of my favorite TV shows of all time, and that is Constable Odo from DS9.
Ooh, you better believe I took a long time thinking about Odo, yeah.
Because I fucking love DS9, but Odo is a piece of shit, actually.
He's a real piece of shit.
I enjoy his whole journey. There's a lot about it I like, but where does he end up at the end of that journey? The worst. I don't want to spoil the end of DS9 for anybody, but like... truly fuck Odo.
Yeah, truly, truly fuck Odo. But like, you're with him long enough to have sympathy for him, to love him,
absolutely,
to identify with his story. Were I a teenager,
he's compelling,
just trying to do a little petty crime on DS9, and I had a goo man put his hand on my shoulder, throw me in the brig. I wouldn't care for that at all. Yeah, and he's very like. And I think he's made that way by his relationship with Quark as like a nasty little criminal. And he's a nasty goo man cop. Like they're like enemies with benefits type. I love like, excellent.
but somehow through that, like through their mutual character development, Quark becomes so much better and more interesting and nuanced and like on the side of what I would consider good. And Odo ends up so much worse and on the side of what I would consider bad.
Yeah, he does get worse when he spoiler, when he finds love. Like he deserves love, he deserves companionship and stuff like that. It was just
doesn't deserve Kira.
It was nasty. Yeah, doesn't deserve Kira of all people.
Who deserves Kira? Jadzia Dax.
Jadzia Dax, a former terrorist and like the fucking like bombshell of outer space. Yeah, of course. That just makes sense.
Yeah. She was way too cool. Way too cool for him. And yeah, he becomes worse when he also becomes worse when he like finds where he comes from, which is like one of the other really interesting journeys that he goes on as a character. Mm-hmm. When he actually finds it, he gets way worse.
He does.
And it's interesting because I do love that show and I do love the journey that his character goes on. But like as a cop character, he's way too much cop. He worked for the fucking Cardassians, we forget.
Yeah, he worked for the space Nazis.
Yeah.
Like, and
then he gets to hook up with Kira. Are you kidding me?
And he doesn't get to have a fucking Dark Night of the Soul about that even a little bit.
Okay, like, no, he does though. Actually, he does. I think he didn't have enough of one. He has an entire episode where they're like back in time and they're like the Bajoran prisoners, and like we see him and everybody else sees him be like the space Nazi cop trying to solve the murder and like letting these innocent Bajorans get killed about it. And like, he definitely grapples with that. But like, yeah, no, I mean, not enough, because he doesn't really become better, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, it's the best Star Trek by a long shot. And And I thought about Odo, but I decided, okay, I like Odo because I like DS9 a lot.
Exactly.
I can't really make a case for him.
That's like, I haven't watched, I haven't watched much of the Star Trek stuff, but I'm also thinking of, did y'all ever watch like The Expanse? Like, that was the recent sci-fi thing. No, whatever. Thomas Jane plays a cop who like sort of becomes a sort of anti-colonial, you know, hero over this, but I couldn't choose him because his hat's too bad. He just wears a really awful hat all the time.
That's such a refreshingly simple criteria for good fictional cop. I mean, Odo also dog shit uniform, like does not look good.
Thomas Jane just wears a really bad fedora the whole time. People make fun of him for it, but yeah, it's too much.
Just go with the deer.
At least the show knows it's a bad hat.
Show knows it's a bad hat. Yeah, yeah. It's a self-consciously bad hat, but I still can't respect him, you know? Sorry, Thomas Jane.
Well... this is, we do have a lot, got a lot left, a lot of meat on this bone. We could, definitely come back with some new cops, not too long from now. But Dale Cooper, I'm sure will like reemerge as we're building our beautiful new cop free society with an eye patch. It's happening again. Sometimes my arms bend back. Yeah. Congratulations to Sam Vimes.
Sam Vimes. You have survived the first round of Revolution.
We all knew you could do it. I was in your corner the whole time. And thank you for helping us build these barricades.
You were right. We needed to spend less time on chance and more time on structural integrity.
That sounds like a podcast to me. Miriam, what do you have to, you got anything to plug?
I've done some other podcasts with other people, mostly exclusively, Margaret Kiljoy, your friend and mine.
Never heard of her.
I've dabbled as a guest on her amazing show, Cool People Who Did Cool Stuff, which I guess everybody who listens to this probably already listens to Cool People Who Did Cool Stuff. But if you're wondering why my voice sounds familiar, I'm the person who talked for 3 hours about how cool Sholem Schwarzbard, the anarchist poet assassin, was.
Oh, yeah. That's your...
This is a great episode. Yeah. It's a good episode.
Thank you.
Solid app. Vicky, no stranger to controversial opinions, as the Huffington Post said, chooser of Dale Cooper. What do you have to plug? Oh, wait, hold on.
Wait, did you find a good quote about me?
No.
Oh, I'm so excited. Okay.
No, I actually went looking them up, but I was like, that's kind of mean.
Yeah, they're sort of mean. People weren't very nice about it.
Vicky published In Defense of Looting, a good book, no matter what the Huffington Post said.
Also a good book.
People were very, very upset about that book. I was briefly the most hated woman in America, which was very powerful.
I was very proud to know you.
Thank you. I have that book, In Defense of Looting, which you can find wherever books are sold found for free on, for example, the Anarchist Library. I have a new book coming out. It's still about a year away, but it's called The Extended Universe. It's with Haymarket. So keep your eyes. I just passed in the manuscript, so I'm very excited about it. And I just had my first piece of fiction published by, I don't know if you guys have heard of The Strangers in a Tangled Wilderness. I don't know if you know, you're familiar. Mm. Yeah. You know it?
The devil, anyway. You say.
Yeah. Yeah. They just published a story of mine, for January. So that's pretty cool. And I did a podcast about that as well. Otherwise you can find me, horny posting on Blue Sky, you know, with all the other girlies.
And, could you, we can cut this if you don't want to, but do you want to give us a quick rundown of what the extended universe is going to be about? Cause it's very much our shit.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the book is a the book basically sets out to answer, to show why the two questions, why are all superhero movies the same, and why did Disney send lawyers to sue the Biden administration to stop them from sharing the coronavirus vaccine in 2021? Why do those two questions have the same answer, which is copyright and intellectual property protection? So the book is about Disney, a history of Disney, and copyright protection and how it leads to both aesthetic and political effects that are very, very serious and far reaching. But I try to make it fun. So every chapter is based on a different Disney movie. And I do a reading of the Disney movie as a mirror of certain moments in either Disney's history or copyright history. I hope it's fun. I don't know.
Holy shit. Can I read that right now?
I can definitely send it to you. Yeah, I mean, if you want it, you know, I'll be happy to send to you. Absolutely. I need some readers, like genuinely. If you'd be interested in reading it, I would love that.
I would.
I would love to. That sounds incredible.
Okay, I'll send you both.
Yeah, I would like to read it early, like showing up and just hearing like the progress of it whenever we have like movie parties or whatever. I'm like, fuck, I gotta read this shit.
Great. Well, I would love, you know. Yeah, if you all both want to read it, I'd be really honored and I would love any feedback that you had because I don't know what, you know, that's the weird thing about writing a book. You know, I spent a year and a half just like in my own head doing this, so I have no idea if it's any good or not. But
I'm sure it's good, but I'll tell.
Yeah,
but
it sounds good.
I'll give you the straight scoop.
Thank you. I need the straight stuff.
Everyone can, who am I online? Bumlung, BUM.LUNG on Instagram. I just did a comic with my friend Jonas because one time DC Comics wanted me to write a Batman and then they got too fucking chicken shit about it. So we just did it anyway. And I think getting sued would be really good publicity for it. So tell your friends, tell the mayor. It's called Laugh Riot. You can buy it somewhere. I think that's it.
Know we're not a video podcast, but I am holding up my copy now.
Oh damn. Damn, Johnny. Incredible. On the spot with that one.
It's great.
Thank you. Yeah, I think that's it. Good podcast. Great job, everybody. From all of us.
Yeah,
here.
This was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was a fucking good one. From all of us here at the Spectacle. I'll see you at the movies.